We finished last week our discussion of the Sermon on the Mount. Went through three chapters in Matthew's Gospel, chapters 5, 6, and 7. In thinking then about what we might be doing for this upcoming lesson and series, I decided that I'd like to take on a series of sermons in Matthew's Gospel that I've never presented in the manner that I am about to do. I hope that you'll see that there's really a group of sermons in Matthew's Gospel that form, you know, a sort of a unit, and we'll try to go through those in the ensuing weeks. I might point out, as we look at the title slide here, this is a view from the Golan Heights, looking then westerly, but along the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee. This is the general location, and a great deal more out of the picture, particularly to the left and right. Galilee, of course, is very much larger than just this region that you see right here. But this sermon is apparently taking place not only in Galilee in Matthew 10, but is also about the mission of the apostles there in Galilee, what is sometimes referred to as the limited commission. Some will say the little commission or the smaller commission, but is a briefer period of time that the apostles were sent out by Jesus to be preaching and teaching. But as a matter of fact, that first sermon, Sermon on the Mount, that we just finished, took place, I'm going to get myself fixed up right here, would have been probably right on this hill right here. Capernaum is right over here. That'll be the site of another of these sermons that we're about to consider. And all but the last of what are called the five discourses of Matthew, in fact, will be taking place in Galilee. The chapters that we'll be considering, well, we've already finished the first one, 5, 6, and 7 in Matthew, but we'll be looking at chapter 10, chapter 13, chapter 18, each of which is a full chapter devoted to a single sermon, all of which are taking place in Galilee, which again, in this background, you're looking at. You can see the Sea of Galilee back there in the distance. But the last of these is chapters 23 through 25. So there's the Sermon on the Mount, the 10th chapter that's just to the apostles, two more chapters, 13 and 18, for more general consumption, and then chapters 23, 24, and 25. A lot of people argue that really that discourse ought to be entitled or considered just as 24 and 25, but there's an argument there, and I like to put the 23rd chapter in there as well. Now, I might also kind of warn you, we're going to look through each of these sermons. It'll take us probably a couple of weeks on each of the full chapter sermons because I've taught Revelation for this congregation, and on occasion we've had other lessons that involve chapters 23 through 25. I probably will be treating that one very, very lightly. But, I refer back to previous lessons. But just so you know, these five discourses, while they're not entitled that way in the gospel itself, they have very long been recognized as these five kind of mountaintops as you go through the gospel of Matthew. These are lengthy sermons and or you might just say conversations or words of advice, instruction, in this case, chapter 10, just to the apostles. But they're kind of unusually large periods of time where we have a big body of information, as if you could sit by the campfire with the apostles or along the shores of the Sea of Galilee with the Sermon on the Mount or there in this little fishing village of Capernaum, and just spend some time with Jesus. It's kind of difficult, I know, particularly in our busy society and times and all this, distracted as we are by our great and unequaled wealth, unparalleled wealth. Now, truly, Solomon did not live nearly so comfortably as you and I do. But it's difficult to take the time, not to find it. We all get the same amount of time. It's a conscious decision you make, to spend with the Scriptures, just reading lengthy sections. And so we have kind of a tendency to get a little snippet here, a little snippet there, but to sit for an hour or two and just drink in the Scriptures is, I recognize, a difficult thing to accomplish these days, as it always has been. So we're going to take some time, look at these occasions at least, remembering that in 5, 6, and 7 of Matthew, in the Sermon on the Mount, I've timed it, it's 15 minutes is all it takes to read that entire sermon. So we do sometimes say, well, it's hard to spend a lot of time, but at least with these sermons, a single chapter is all that's being asked except for the first and the last. So let's come on over to Matthew chapter 10 now with that little bit of an introduction and look at these first six verses where the field of activity, the area they're being sent into, their mission geographic parameters are being given. Having summoned his 12 disciples. So while we all understand the word apostle means sent out, disciple means learner or follower, mathetes and apostello, respectively, we see the difference between these two. In this case, it's clearly just the 12. And so they're called disciples. That word would be broader and would include, thousands at this time in Jesus' preaching ministry. But these disciples are the 12 disciples. That number is now being assigned. And not only is the number being assigned, but their names are given. And so God wanted Matthew to tell us quite specifically. So let's remember this as we get on into the sermon, that this sermon was not presented for general consumption. This is a private meeting with 13 people, Jesus and 12 apostles. The advice that he gives then, I offer the warning at the outset, we need to be very careful not to just assume is speaking to us. This is perhaps, at least on the top five list, but maybe even number one, of the biggest mistakes that people make in Bible study is not appreciating the context, not looking at the larger, fuller picture. So we come in, we make an argument, very powerful argument, about a single verse, but not really understanding what went before and after. We ourselves don't get a very clear view, and of course you can wreak havoc presenting to people ideas that really just aren't in the Scripture. So it's, remember this about chapter 10. Anytime you're quoting from chapter 10, you've really got to be awake and say, well, now, wait a minute, to whom was Jesus speaking? About what was Jesus talking? And therefore, how wide, should this advice be spread? And so the names of the 12 are given. Now, please note in verse 1, though, that he gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. This is an amazing moment in Jesus' preaching history. He now takes these 12 men and in a very singular moment, apparently, what must have been rather dramatic, he is giving them great, enormous power. He is bestowing upon them now the miraculous abilities over not even this earth and its problems, but the spirit world as well. And it's the first thing mentioned, over unclean spirits. They can cast out demons, heal every kind of disease. Nothing is prevented them, prohibited them. It did not matter what your illness or infirmity might be. You come to one of these 12 men during the time that they're performing this mission, and you can be healed. It's that simple. There isn't anything that they cannot control. And then it says, not just every disease, but every sickness. Well, I'm not sure I know the difference between them, but I'm guessing they cut a pretty wide swath of healthiness everywhere they went. They're just leaving behind. Everybody's doing great. Everybody's fine. All the aches and pains are gone. So again, they're named Simon, who's called Peter, Andrew, his brother, James, the son of Zebedee, John, his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas, Matthew, the tax gatherer, James, son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. So Matthew, of course, writing after the fact, led by the Spirit, identifies that Judas will be a traitor. He is perhaps already contemplating these things. But Jesus is facing 12 people, all men, now empowered miraculously to cast out demons and heal every disease. These 12, in verse 5, Jesus sent out They are becoming apostles. This is a particular apostolic mission. They are sent out after instructing them. Do not go in the way of the Gentiles, and do not enter any city of the Samaritans, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. One of the, I find, more enjoyable things in going to Israel is how often you come across shepherds and their sheep. This particular scene is in the tribal area of Benjamin. Benjamin spread out to the west and to the east, you know, left and right from Jerusalem. Jerusalem barely inside that tribal area, and then moved up to the north. Not a very big tribal land at all. It encompasses a lot of different kinds of terrain. Some of it's fairly mountainous, some of it's fairly high, gets snow. The other is rather deserty. It's a unique little area, not very big. But I, you know, I picked this one just to see. You guys are being sent to lost sheep of the house of Israel and nobody else. I don't want you to go to the Samaritans. I don't want you to go to the Gentiles. I don't want you to go into any of those regions or any of those cities or to any of those people. You are going to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So Jesus is very straightly charging them. It will be disobedience. It would be a sin. It would be rebellion. If they get out in this mission and they want to spread this good news to the Samaritan area or to Gentile peoples, they are restricted. They are prohibited. And this ought not to be surprising to us, having read the book before, knowing the end from the beginning, because in Matthew 15:24, Jesus said exactly the same thing about himself. I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So in both cases, that only really looms large. It's all capital letters. This is an apostolic mission, a miraculous mission to a very small area which specifically excludes anybody who is not a Jew in that area. So remember that. This is the context. Whom are they speaking? What are they trying to accomplish? It's the fulfillment of Jesus' mission to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Now, brethren, that does not mean that you had to buy a ticket. I'm pretty sure it does not mean you had to show your driver's license, and if you got it in a Gentile city, you know, then you couldn't come and listen. But they didn't go to these regions. They were not involved in those kinds of activities. Lost sheep. Lost sheep. One of Jesus' most famous parables. Sheep are still to this day, all over Israel, all over the West Bank and the Palestinian territories, all over Syria and, you know, in the Golan Heights and Jordan. And so in Israel itself and surrounding Israel then, you see shepherds out in their fields all the time. What is the one mission of these people, 12 men? It is the lost sheep of the house of Israel, and to do this in verse 7. As you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And there you have the mission goal. You teach these Jews that the kingdom that belongs to heaven is at hand. Now, we understand, he's not saying the final judgment will be here any minute, it's real close, and then the world will be destroyed. He's trying to say, no, that's not that judgment, you know, at all, but you're going to preach that a kingdom that belongs to heaven, not that you're all going to heaven soon in final judgment, but this kingdom that God owns, a new king is coming. Preach saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Now, brethren, for our purposes here, I don't want to get much into this. And for those of you that are regularly with us, we've done this in other classes as well, and very recently because of the Wednesday night class on Leviticus and Deuteronomy. So let me just say, if in your mind you have an idea that there's no such thing in any way, shape, or form as a kingdom yet when the apostles will be preaching, but that it will, for the first time ever in history, suddenly show up on the earth now, a year or two later, when Jesus rises from the dead and the Acts chapter 2 takes place. Okay, be very careful about that, because in these other classes I've already shown you there was a kingdom that belonged to heaven, and there always had been. Anybody that was serving their God properly was ruled by the Lord God of heaven. He's the king, and they're his kingdom, his subjects. There's always been a kingdom, and Jew and Gentile both could be a part of it. If you were pleasing God, serving him as you ought throughout your life, from Eden to Moses, and then whether you're a Jew or a Gentile, from Moses to Christ and after, God has always been trying to reach people. And these people who respond to his message, they are embraced by him as his subjects that he rules over. So remember this. There'd always been a kingdom, for instance, since Saul, let's just start there, say always, but start with Saul. Among the Jews, starting with Saul, you had Saul as king, and that's a kingdom. A different kingdom came when Saul died and David was made king. It's over the same people that Saul ruled over, and it will be expanding. David added a lot of territory. He was a man of war. But it was one kingdom being replaced by another kingdom, because it was one king being replaced by another king. It's perfectly appropriate to think in terms of David's kingdom as opposed to Saul's kingdom. But that's not to say there never was a kingdom and David started something so new that it's a first ever. It's not that. Solomon had a new kingdom. The kingdom was at hand as David was aging and then died. And the same is true throughout history. So just think about that. I won't show you the verses again this morning, but this mission is limited to the kingdom that belongs to God then. The Jews, he's their Lord and Master, he's ruling over them. But a new king is coming. A new kingdom is coming. A better kingdom built on better promises, all the Hebrew letter. And so, you men, don't go to the Gentiles. Well, we all know the Gentiles will be a part of Christ's kingdom, but not yet. At this point in time, just the Jews, you tell them, the new kingdom's at hand. Why? Well, because their new king is walking the earth. He's here now. And that, in verse 7, the kingdom is at hand, because Jesus is the new king, is their mission. Now, in verse 8, we have again, as we did in verse 1, the apostolic power. Heal the sick, but what we didn't learn in verse 1 is this in verse 8. What's the second thing in verse 8 they're going to do? Raise the dead. He is telling them, ordering them, commanding them, raise the dead when you go out there. I've given all 12 of you men these powers. Go raise people from the dead. Now, you'll learn early in the Roman letter, this is the supreme proof that Jesus is that king. He came with power. But these men are given their king's power. They are given power over demons. They are given power over every illness and sickness. And they are given power even over the dead. That is in Scripture designated the most powerful power you can have. There isn't anything greater than that. Cleanse lepers. Cast out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Now, context again, and thinking about freely. Brethren, by this time, a lot of animosities are beginning to develop between those Pharisees and Jesus and his disciples. These men are going to meet opposition. These men are going to have problems. Detractors and liars and people, you know, maligning them and slandering them. And so, my suspicion, just think about it, this is my own personal idea, but this freely you've received, freely given, suggests to me that they were to be very impartial among the Jews, the only people they're sent to, among the lost sheep,
They are to be, though, very open in the distribution of these great blessings. So you had guys, you know, been arguing and fighting and all the rest of that, but nonetheless, you're going to manifest these miracles to everybody, and I'm suggesting even for everybody. Be impartial. Don't let any kind of judgment come into your mind about who's worthy or deserving among these lost sheep. Some of them are going to treat you nicer than others. Some of them are going to, you know, behave in unacceptable ways. But you received freely. Now freely give. What a moment in world history. 12 men. One of them we know will become a traitor if he's not already entertaining those thoughts, pilfering, you know, out of their common little money bag. And now empowered just beyond imagination. And they are told to freely go out and raise the dead and cast out demons and heal the sick. Do you suppose that would garner any attention in Galilee? Can you imagine the expansion of the interest because of the heightening of everyone's level of excitement? This just had to be awesome, brethren. With people clamoring and stampeding and coming from who knows how far, because you can't help but be healed. If they can get to the graveside, they'll bring your daddy back. They'll bring your grandma back. They'll bring your children back. There is nothing that they cannot do. Go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And you guys pay the price for it. Now you gave... You receive freely, give freely. Know this, 9 through 15, and our lesson will be finished for the morning. Do not acquire gold. Huh? We're going on a journey? Gonna be gone. What? Or silver, or copper for your money belts, or a bag for your journey. Even two tunics, or sandals, or a staff. For the worker is worthy of his support. Okay. Now I'm sending you out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. I'm giving you vast power, and I want you to just cast yourself on the hospitality of the people out there. Go. At this point, I know I'm having second thoughts, and I guess you would be too. Do not acquire gold, silver, or copper, even a bag to put a second tunic, an extra pair of sandals, or a staff in. You're worthy of your support. And, calling them to pay this price in faith, he then says, into whatever city or village you enter, inquire who's worthy in it and abide there until you go away. Who's worthy in it? You're going to walk into town and say, who are the worthiest citizens in this town? What would the immediate response be? Worthy how? What are you asking? You asking the wealthiest, the most powerful, the most virtuous? What do you mean worthy? What are you, worthy to be visited by you? Who do you think you are? And none of that's really explained. Isn't it amazing, this moment in time? You go in, you inquire who's worthy. Let your greeting of peace come upon it, the house. And if it's not worthy, so they said they think he is. You get there and realize not so worthy after all. Let your greeting of peace return to you. That would have been a public shaming of the host that put you up. And whoever does not receive you, nor heed your words. So what has he just told them? There are going to be people who won't receive the thing you say. They're not going to respond to it. As you go out of that house or that city, shake off the dust of your feet. Great insult in their culture. Truly I say to you, it'll be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. Okay, you 12, go on. They're going to pay for this. Courage is required. Strength of the backbone to say, I believe you are right and worthy. I believe you are wrong, and I ought to just kick the dirt off my feet because even the dirt of your town is too dirty for me to carry around. You're just a defiled individual and household. So, brethren, what have we got as a context before next week we get into these numerous other things in the remainder of the chapter there, but as it starts off, what have you got? You've got 12 men right now who just have to be the most excited guys you ever met and worried. What is this? I want you guys to just go to the lost sheep of Ashes, or make sure you don't go to the Gentiles or the Samaritans. And when you get out there, I'm going to give you vast powers, and you give freely of those powers. And then you're going to meet opposition. So I just want you to know, don't prepare in any way. Just walk out the door with the clothes on your back right now. And then, trust me, people will put you up. Some of them are bad and some of them are good. So make sure that you honor the ones who are worthy and you dishonor the ones who aren't. Make sure you do a public show of shaming them so everybody knows how you feel about it. Okay, this is what it is, brethren, to be what? An apostle. Can I say now, as I'm so fond of saying, go thou and do likewise? Well, no. Why? Because I'm not an apostle and you aren't either. Okay? So we'll remember that as we go through. What have we got in Matthew 10, second of the five discourses? Men prepared for mission in every way. Go you and do your job to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Now, brethren, do we have a mission? Sure we do. Are we not to go to lost sheep? Well, sure we are. Are we not the people of God, who will therefore sometimes be welcomed and other times maligned? Sure we are. These men will set a standard of service from which we can learn. But is this directed at us? No. These are not words that were directed at us. They're limited to 12 men in a particular place and time and particular people. We'll remember that as we continue on. So thank you so much for the setup here. And then next week we'll get more into the lesson itself. But as always, if you recognize yourself as lost sheep, particularly like this picture here, because you can only barely see our shepherd right here amid the rocks. A couple of times I would be out hiking around just by myself, you know, and I would bump into shepherds like this and find these guys, you know, just alone out there with their thoughts. But if you recognize, brethren, that you just haven't been doing the job, that had Jesus picked you to be an apostle, it wouldn't have gone nearly so well as it did with the 12 he did pick. If you haven't been living up the expectations he has for you, respond. Come and say, I don't want to be a lost sheep. I really want to be the best I can be. If you're not yet a Christian, you haven't entered into this flock, if Jesus is not yet your king, let today be the day of salvation.